Hello, I'm Monsignor Jim Lasanti. Today I'm personally speaking. I'll be joined by Michael Dowling. Michael is the president and CEO of Northwell Health, the largest healthcare provider and private employer in New York State. Please stay with us. Welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti, and Michael Dowling will be joining me now. As president and CEO of Northwell Health, Michael leads a clinical, academic, and research enterprise with a workforce of more than 75,000 people. Northwell cares for more than 2 million people annually through a vast network of outpatient facilities, primary care practices, urgent care centers, rehabilitation and end-of-life programs, and 23 hospitals. Michael grew up in Limerick County, Ireland, in serious poverty, and was the first in his family to attend college. He says his childhood prepared him for a career in public health. Michael says he has seen his share of crisis, including the AIDS crisis, of course, and crack epidemics of the 80s and 90s. But the COVID-19 pandemic, he says, is by far the worst crisis he has been through. Michael successfully navigated the health system, leading through a pandemic, through the first COVID-19 epicenter in the United States, which is, of course, New York. Northwell has treated more than 150,000 COVID patients. Before joining Northwell in 1995, Michael was Senior Vice President of Empire Blue Cross Blue Shield. Prior to that, he served for 12 years in New York government. In 2020, Michael was ranked number 2 on Modern Health's 100 Most Influential People in Healthcare. Michael has written an inspiring and moving book called After the Roof Caved In, about his life as an Irish immigrant from a poverty-stricken childhood to become a CEO in America. It's a powerful memoir about how he triumphed against all odds and how hard work and education enabled one young man to change his life and make a huge difference in the lives of others. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking, Irish immigrant and president and CEO of Northwell Health, Michael Dowling. We welcome today Michael Dowling. Michael's the president and CEO of Northwell Health, and we're talking about a book that he's written called After the Roof Caved In. But importantly, Michael, I love the subtitle, An Immigrant's Journey from Ireland to America. Michael, let me ask you something. My Irish forebears came in the 1820s, the Italians in the 1880s. They all ran into resistance. Do you have any insight after coming to America into why, since only the Native Americans were actually here from the beginning, why is it we're always so resistant to the new folks on the block? What is it in either the American character or in the human character that makes us so frightened or resistant to welcoming people?
I think it is more about the human character than the American character, because I think you find that in all parts of the world. So people who come first, they will talk about how difficult it was for them. Yeah. And how they have made it, and they have become relatively successful. And I think there's a nervousness that they're going to lose some of it when a new group comes in. It's always, if you look back through American history, you know, when the Irish came and then the Italians came, they were worried about losing jobs to the Italians. Mm-hmm. People came from the South, and people of color came from the South, North. It was also about employment and jobs. So I think it's trying to protect what you've got. Because people come from the same cultural, ethnic background, I want to preserve that DNA. And in many ways, they don't want it necessarily interrupted or impeded by any other group that will come in. And then it takes a long period of time for people to try to get to integrate and begin to socialize and understand that even though people come from a different place and a different culture, that actually we're basically all the same. And that's what happens even with the Irish and the Italians. They began to intermarry, but it took a long time for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the Italians set up their own separate churches.
That's right.
Because the Irish Catholic churches wouldn't allow them practice their religion in the Catholic churches. This is why not far from here, You have churches that have a building with a church upstairs and a church downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
The church in the basement was for the Italians.
That's right.
Right? And so it's an interesting history. I mean, it's the process of immigration. It's the process of assimilation. And, of course, what the Italians did after a while was they built separate churches, I should say better-looking churches, a couple of blocks away from where the Irish had their Catholic churches.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. Why you would find two churches in the same couple of blocks. You see it all over the place in Brooklyn and in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
But it's part of the immigrant experience. You find you're very lucky. And one last thing. When the people came, it's kind of ironic. When people come, they've been, to some extent, mistreated by the people who were here before they came.
Right.
They complain about it. Yet they do the very same thing to the people who come after them.
It's the truth.
Right? They repeat the history over and over again.
You think we would learn somewhere along the way. For those who read Dr. Dowling's book, After the Roof Caved In, one of the constant themes is the experience of growing up with real poverty. I mention that because some time ago I'd been interviewing Neil Cavuto from Fox News about his book called More Than Money, and his conclusion was he's known all these billionaires, and they all seem to have miserable lives, miserable unhappiness, bad family life. And I'm wondering, in your case, is it possible, Michael, that growing up in poverty made you the man you are, or conversely, if you'd been born rich, would you be where you are now?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think I've been very fortunate in many ways that I did grow up the way I grew up, because it gives you fortitude, it gives you perspective, it helps to build a toughness that you need, a resilience, and of course you've got to stay humble as you grow up in your career. But in many ways, poverty is a fabulous motivator. Because you're forced to do things that other people would say, well, I would never do that.
Right.
But when you come from poverty situation, you realize that anything that you do is better than what you had. So you're willing to try your hand in it. You're willing to experiment. I think it strengthens you. It gives you a broader perspective. You can deal with disappointment better. You don't get as frustrated, at least in my case, you don't get as frustrated as quickly as you would otherwise, because you understand that when people complain to me today about, oh, my God, we're having a terrible time. My second car didn't work this morning. Oh, my God. And, I got a new job, but it's 20 minutes further away. So I have a harder drive. I mean, I said, and you're complaining about this? That's not a complaint. You should sit back and say, look how fortunate I am. What would happen if you had to walk or if you didn't have a job at all? I do think it there's a benefit to it. I'm not recommending it for everybody, but I do believe that in my situation, I was fortunate to grow up the way I grew up, as difficult as it was.
In Dr. Dowling's book, After the Roof Came In, he also talks about dealing in the family with disability. Some years ago, Michael, I had Cardinal Basil Hume come over from London to give a talk at our college seminary, and his topic he chose was what the disabled teach us about the mind of God. Yeah. Do you have any insights, having lived with Mom with her hearing difficulty, Dad with his rheumatoid arthritis? What are we supposed to learn from the disabilities of our life?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to what I said. It's funny, my mother never, ever would admit that she ever had a disability.
Wow.
She was very religious, number one. She went to church all the time, considered herself quite lucky, and always said to me, irrespective of your condition, irrespective of what your circumstance is, it should never limit your potential. And it should never shift you from pursuing all of the opportunities that are out there. Mm-hmm. So she saw good in everything. So, you look at it and you say, compared to my mother, I'm very, very fortunate. I mean, I have my hearing, I have my eyesight. My father, of course, was crippled with arthritis at a very, very young, relatively young age. So it gives you a broader perspective on life, and you realize that you can, if you're met with circumstances that are a little bit disruptive in your own life, mm-hmm. you kind of compare it to what, you know, like in my case, what my mother went through, and I say, well, that's not that bad. What I'm going through is not that bad at all. And why should I complain? She never complained at the fact that she couldn't hear, but she acted, you had a hearing aid or anything, she lip read. So if you were looking at her, she'd be able to figure out what you were saying. But she socialized, she traveled, she came, I brought her to the United States 19 different times. Wow. And she never ever would allow that to be a determinant of her future, the fact that she did have a disability.
You loved her a lot, didn't you?
Well, she was an exceptional person. She had a tough life. I grew up herself in poverty, but was very, very focused on education, very focused on what you could accomplish. She was never one that said, you cannot do this. Her attitude always was, in a very subliminal way. I mean, she never lectured it. She never sat you down and lectured. It was how she behaved every day. Mm-hmm. She always gave that you believe that whatever you wanted to do, you could possibly do. That you don't let your circumstance determine your future. You just take the chances, educate yourself. And she also was, always about be good to people, be trustworthy, have a lot of integrity, treat people well, and life is good. You know, she always would say, life is good. You know, feel happy about your circumstance, life is good.
Dr. Dowling, there are many, you write with a great intimacy, and I love the book, but for me, oddly enough, the chapter that meant the most to me was the sending away of your brother Joe by your dad. I wondered, you know, now that you've been in the role of a parent, can you ever imagine in your life that there would be anything that would cause you to send your kids away?
No, I've never, I've had moments when, every parent has had, you had this momentary moment, oh God, and then you kind of walk around the block, but, it resulted in my father was he was a good man, but he was a tough guy. Mm. And you never knew who was going to come in the door any night, when you were at home. He could come in and be nice. He could come in and be absolutely awful. But you knew the personality was going to change, and he was very, very quick-tempered. And I and my other brother, who was close to me in age, brother named Sean, we were able to handle it because we would fight back. Mm-hmm. We you get in our faces, we're going to come right back at you. My brother Joe was a little different. And he decided after that night when there was that big altercation, it wasn't the first time, he decided just to walk away and leave. And he'd gone. And it disrupted the family big time.
Yeah.
My father was never again the same. And it changed my mother as well. I was away at the time. I was not at home when that actually happened. Mm-hmm. So I came back. I was in college. I came back looking for him. And, of course, we couldn't find him. And I did not know what happened to him. Because he never, ever talked about it until I was doing the book.
Okay.
All these years, I would ask him, so where did you go that night? Where did you end up? How did you get to where you went? And I knew he ended up in England, but I didn't know how he got there. But it was only when we were doing the book that he actually opened up and told us. Wow. None of us knew.
It's a powerful story. Powerful and painful story.
He had a difficult after that. He liked to drink, and he is in the book. He became an alcoholic and was in terrible shape. And he and I, because of that and the disruption that caused at home, etc., I didn't talk to him for years. We're a little, Irish. We're Irish in many ways. There's that toughness there. And my wife would often say to me, "Well, what happened to have you decide that you're not going to talk to him again for a while?" And I couldn't remember. But then I was so stubborn to go back and make up. And he was the same. So that went on. That went on for a number of years. And today we're best friends. Today we talk all the time. He gave up the drink. He hasn't drank in 30 years. He's a great guy. And actually, I was on the phone with him last night. So we talk all the time, every weekend. I talk to all of them every weekend.
Isn't that amazing?
So we're pretty close. For an Irish family, being that close is pretty good, you know.
Dr. Daly, in my ministry, I'm in a parish of 3,000 families, and most weekends I get to celebrate weddings. And to do a good job at preaching, I always ask the couple to write me an essay each on why of the billion people out there you could marry, why is this the one? You have a charming life, but you have also a challenging life in terms of being very busy, doing great things for many people. How did you come to decide that in my life, in this journey, Kathy's the one I want to walk with?
Well, I was married before. This is my second marriage. That's in the book as well. And it happened because I had a friend of mine who went to college with me at Fordham University, was telling me for many years that there was this lady that I should be introduced to. And she had actually gone to college with Kathy, my wife, in Connecticut.
Okay.
She was telling Kathy the same thing. She was like the matchmaker. So she kept telling me that you should meet Kathy. And this goes on for a couple of years. And I would say to her, well, just why don't you introduce me? And she says, because you're not ready.
Mm.
When you are ready, I'll introduce you. And then finally, at a Christmas party in the city, where she figured out how she would get both of us there, she introduced us. And it was pretty well immediate. I mean, Kathy is a very special person. She comes from a very, very, very close-knit family, highly educated, very family-oriented, but also very career-oriented at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We have common interests. We were able to I like to be with somebody where I can just be myself.
Right.
And she allowed me to be just myself. And I've always worked very, very long hours. I work all the time, and she's very comfortable with that. But we hit it off at the beginning, and it was very interesting, the first date. I knew that when she said yes to this, that it was going to work. I said to her, can we meet again? And she said, okay. I said, do you like hockey? She says, I love hockey. And I said, want to come to a Ranger game? And she said, yeah, I'll come to a Ranger game. I found out that when she went home that night, she took a book out to read a little bit about hockey because she knew nothing about it. And so she came to the hockey game, and it was it. It was it's just that natural attraction, I think. And, you know, somebody with common interests, and that allows you to be a partner but also be yourself.
I want to talk a little bit about God and church, if I can. You talk about in the book this one priest that impressed you because he had a sense of the gospel in the perspective of social justice. And then, unfortunately, as I turn the next page in the book, you talk about the fact that he turned out to be a bit of a charlatan, a con man, a fake, an exploiter of people.
Yeah.
But I didn't sense from that, when you have someone you put up on a pedestal, you think he's a good guy, and he disappoints you, that you threw out the whole church or the whole faith because of one bad guy. A lot of people don't respond the way you did. They find a reason to leave the church, and that's the end of it. What made you say my faith is more important than one bad guy?
Well, I mean, you can't take an incident by one a human being to then allow you to castigate the whole organization. I mean, the church is much bigger than any one individual.
Yeah,
it's a belief system. And just because it's like anything in life, if even in politics, you believe in a certain set of things in politics, but then you meet a person who has, you know, who's just a terrible human being that does terrible things. It doesn't totally disrupt the way you believe about politics. You may not like that person, mm-hmm. but it doesn't change your life. And I don't adjust that way. He was a wonderful person and still probably is. In many ways. And what I loved about him in college was that when he gave sermons in the college church, it was very reality oriented. It was really, you could listen to it. You could relate to it. It was human. It was about life, real life. Mm-hmm. And he was terrific with the students. And of course, later on, other things occurred. Yeah. And he took on another life. But no, it didn't. It's much bigger than any one individual or any one experience. It's like if you have a friend and one day the friend totally completely disappoints you, doesn't necessarily mean you give up the friendship, right? You stick with it. You don't let one unique circumstance disrupt the whole, right. the whole world in that area.
After the roof caved in is the book we're talking about with Dr. Dowling. My 100-year-old Irish mother is probably alive because of the treatment she got years ago at North Shore Hospital. But there was a sense, too, because it was years ago, of the hospital as a community place. You know, you could pick up the phone and talk to Dennis Buckley, the administrator. You could call Dr. John Mountain, the chief of surgery, and he'd get back to you. I mentioned all that.
Going way back in history here.
Yeah, way back in history. Yeah. But you now built Northwell into something amazingly helpful to many, many thousands, millions of people. But how do you maintain that sense of intimacy or community when you're as big as you are?
Well, and we try that. This is something you've got to work on all the time.
Yeah.
Healthcare is local. Healthcare is about individuals doing things with other individuals. It's person to person. What I try to spend a lot of my time doing is making sure from a leadership point of view, you've got the right people who understand the nature of the business, that it is a person to person human business.
I'm promising to wrap this soon, Michael, but Michael Dowling's our guest. The book, as I mentioned, is After the Roof Caved In. You said in other interviews, and I was just intrigued by this, that even after we all get vaccinated, that this isn't over in terms of COVID-19. What did you mean by that, Michael?
Well, there's two parts to this crisis. One is there's the medical aspect of it, people getting sick with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it will be over, you know, and then maybe hopefully in the next 6 to 9 months, let's say.
Okay.
The vaccine, once we get people vaccinated, which I think we will make an awful lot of progress in the next 3 to 4 months because more supply of the vaccine will come. And I think we'll be able to move a lot quicker with that. As long as people still wear the mask and social distance. People should not say, well, I just got the vaccine, therefore I don't have to wear the mask anymore. They got to do both. You got to be disrupt yourselves a little bit more for a couple of more months.
Mm-hmm.
But the other point to keep in mind here is that even when the medical aspect of COVID recedes into the background, the economic implications of COVID will go on for the next 5 to 10 years. The businesses that have closed will never come back.
Right.
The unemployment that has occurred that will never come back. If you walk around any location, if you walk around Manhattan, I was in there last night and I'm driving up one of the streets and lots of businesses closed, lots of for rent sales sites. Now, a year ago, there were people working there.
Yeah.
Those businesses have gone. So, and a lot of people, the nature of work is changing. People are working remotely more now than they were ever before. So I think we have to rebuild back the economy because if the economy doesn't come back, despite the fact that people might not be suffering from COVID, they'll be suffering from the results of unemployment, lack of income. There'll be domestic issues, health issues, family issues, education issues. That's a long haul. That, in my view, will be a tougher to deal with for the next 5 years than the COVID was for the last 9 months. So it's a two-stage issue.
Michael, when you've been in medical health long enough to have remembered and been involved with the battle against AIDS,
sure,
as well as the
crisis,
battle
yeah.
against crack, and sure. I just wonder, do you ever, when you're facing a terrible situation like that, or now COVID-19, how do you keep hope alive personally?
Optimism.
Yeah.
Put it in perspective. Look through history and what people have had to deal with. And then say, you know, yeah, COVID has been difficult, but that has been a lot worse over the course of history. there are people in parts of the world now in unbelievable dire circumstances, just not because of COVID, but look at people in different parts of the world trying to find out where do they live anymore. People in Ethiopia, people in the Middle East. You know, if you look at even in the Irish experience, I've used this as an example of the people who left Ireland in the coffin ships back 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago, to come to the United States. Took 3 to 4 months over to come by boat. Many died, some who survived, and they rebuilt their lives. So overall, the people are good, the world is good, life is good overall, and ever so often you have these interruptions. Mm-hmm. Right? And look beyond it. You know, we'll get through this. We will win over this. This is not going to take us down, and have a positive, optimistic attitude about the potential that we can all be having 2 years from now, 3 years from now. So it's a temporary interruption, and not one of the worst that we've ever had.
I want to thank the positive, upbeat, hopeful Michael Dowling for being with us. I hope our listeners will get hold of After the Roof Caved In. Michael, you've been given a lot of gifts by the good Lord up above, and you've used them well for the service of others. Keep on keeping on. Please stay well and doing the great things you do. Thank you so much.
I thank you. I've been, I consider myself very fortunate, very lucky.
You're a good man. Thanks again for being with us, Michael. As we end today's program, I want to thank you all for being with us. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. To listen to our Personally Speaking podcast with some of our most recent shows, all you need to do is go to YouTube and punch in Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti. Please don't forget to hit like and subscribe. Personally Speaking is also available as a podcast on personallyspeakingpodcast.buzzsprout.com. You can also listen to past episodes by going to www.closeencountertv.com. And I'd ask you as well to go to my parish website, which is www.ollmp.org. We have past shows as well as Monsignor Jim's weekly mass and homilies. Personally Speaking is also on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti. Please share yourself with others, especially in your family. Personally Speaking is made possible because of the generosity and kindness of many people. I wanted to thank the law office of Anthony Capitola. I want to thank Peg and Pete D'Angelo, and for all of you who have given support, including my friend Randy and Tom Slade, in keeping us on the air. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer of Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. I want to thank you all for being with us, and we hope you'll be with us again next time on Personally Speaking.